Welcome to the Pathways to Heart podcast series, presented by the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning at Sophia University. Sophia University is located in California and offers students a unique educational experience rooted in transformative, transpersonal education. The Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning supports transformative education by creating engaged leaders and learners through resources, trainings, and events. This podcast series focuses on critical emerging issues in our communities. Today's podcast is an interview with Leah Goldstein on Transforming Through Endurance, interviewed by host Tara Papilla. Leah Goldstein was the world kickboxing champion at age 17. After a career as an elite commando in the Israeli military, Leah went on to become a professional cyclist, completing the longest single-stage race in the world, the Race Across America. Here she shares with us joys and challenges of transforming through endurance.
Hey, welcome, Leah, and thank you for agreeing to be interviewed. I'd like to ask for the first question. I've asked you to explain the evolution of your athletic interests from a young girl to what you do today.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, it started because I was, I was bullied as a child in elementary school. And so my salvation was watching Bruce Lee. And, you know, I said, wow, you know, he can fight off 30 people. I only have to fight off 8. So I really wanted to learn whatever he was doing. And I didn't know, but it was Kung Fu. And so then I begged my mother for lessons to put me into Taekwondo. And then in Taekwondo, I just excelled. I fell in love with the sport. You know, by the time I was 12 years old, I was a junior national champion. And part of the reason why is because my father was a national champion sport of boxing. So, you know, he trained a lot with me. He taught me the skills, the way they stand, the way they move, the way they punch. And then that transitioned into kickboxing, right? And then that's kind of how my athletic career started. It kind of just stemmed from the bullying at school and trying to figure it out and solve that problem.
And then how did you get into cycling from there?
Oh, well, the cycling actually started by accident in the Middle East. I was a commander in Base 8 in Israel. And Base 8 is a military intelligence base, and we trained different troops. And the lieutenant there from the commando, he was the national champion in the sport of triathlon. And he saw me training all the time because as instructors and soldiers in Israel, you know, you don't stand there with the clipboard and watch everybody else do their thing. You do it with them. So when I wasn't training troops, I was training myself during, you know, through the obstacles and whatnot and running. And I commuted to the base on my bike because, you know, military wage, it's not like you can afford a car. So, you know, he just, you know, we kind of noticed each other and he just says, you know what, you want to come out for a ride? I didn't really want to, but I didn't want to say no. And then we went for this bike ride. And I just fell in love with the sport. And I was, you know, I was surprised at how good I was. And my cycling actually started with duathlon because in Israel at that time, there was no pro women cycling. I mean, the men had it, but not the women. So, you know, the cycling started with duathlon, me excelling in that sport, primarily because of the cycling leg of the sport, you know, and then me wanting to be this pro cyclist at the age of 30.
Okay. That was my next question. How old were you? Were you 30 when you discovered cycling with him or?
No. I was a Belush agent, which is, I was involved with the spying unit. So I went from the military to the police force to a spying agency called the Belush, right? And during that period, you know, is when I was, when any time that I had, I trained with him, I rode, ran, whatnot, and I was doing duathlons. And as I progressed, you know, in that phase of my life, I realized that something that I didn't want to do. I mean, it's a whole nother topic, right? But the only thing that really made me feel alive was competing. And I decided, you know what? Life is too short. I was 30 years old and I thought, very delusional, that I was good enough to be this pro cyclist. And mind you too, I mean, I was a big fish in a very small pond. Israel is tiny, right? You know, once I came to North America, you know, I was a shrimp in an ocean. And that's when I realized, holy crap, I'm not that good, you know?
And then how did that, you're 30 years old, you're realizing that this sport is a whole different game. When did you get introduced to Race Across America? And then please explain what that is for people who don't know.
Right. Well, mind you, I started with pro racing, right? And I was shunned from the get-go. I mean, the Canadian Federation basically told me, you know, I was too old. I was 30 years old. I was too big for climbing, too small for sprinting. I basically missed the boat. So, but I really wanted to excel in the sport. I wanted to be a stage racer. So it took me 8 years kind of to get to this level of racing that I wanted to get to. And then I realized too, I mean, when I finally got there at 38 years old, you know, that I think ultra endurance racing was more suited for me, you know, because it was more of an individual sport. And I had qualities that I think I would have excelled a lot faster. For one, my ability to push myself beyond my limits. Two, my ability to handle and control pain. And three, my ability to stay functional on very little sleep. So when I retired from pro racing, I kind of jumped into ultra endurance racing right away.
And what does Race Across America entail?
Oh my gosh. Well, Race Across America, it's one of the hardest endurance races in the world. So it's a 3,000 mile nonstop race from Oceanside all the way to Annapolis. And what makes it difficult is you only have 12 days to do it. So in a 48 hour period, you're only sleeping between 0 to 3 hours. And it's not a matter of if, but when you're going to experience back, neck, knee, constipation, diarrhea, swelling, and Mother Nature will throw everything at you, wind, rain, storms, whatnot, you know. And then, of course, you have to deal with the hallucinations, because after so many hours of riding, like my hallucinations start about 35 hours in, you know, so you have all of that, you know, to deal with getting across the country in 12 days with a crew of 9 people, hoping that the chemistry will be fine and that there won't be navigational error. So it's just a, like I said, it's a completely different beast than anything else I've ever done.
And how many people typically compete, men and women combined, in an event like that?
Well, there's solo racers, and then there's team racing as well, right? So for the solo racing, I think with women, it's probably about like 20 to 30% of the field. And I'm going to say the finishers in a 12 day is about 25 to 30%. Like, for example, last year around 2021, only 3 of us finished. And that was because of the extreme weather. Yeah. It was, yeah, I mean, we can talk about it later, but the temperatures, I mean, hitting, you know, 50 Celsius, which I think is 120 Fahrenheit, not just through California and Arizona, but into Kansas, into Maryland, to Illinois. It was like right across the country. And so that's what made it extremely difficult. Even teams had pulled out because of the extreme heat.
And the teams rotate among each other?
Correct. Yes. And that's the thing. Yes. We don't rotate, right? And they, I mean, if you look at how many teams dropped even before getting into Durango, I think that was a record-breaking, you know, another record-breaking attempt for Ram as well, as just the teams that had dropped out. But I mean, it was, I had never experienced anything like that in my life. I mean, in Kansas, I had burned right through my jersey. I got blisters right through my jerseys. You know, it was, yeah, I mean, one of the riders there, like GPS monitor on their bike started to melt, you know, it was just excruciating. And I'm just saying, you know, it was 50 Fahrenheit, but you know, from the hot asphalt, from the ground, you can imagine the heat emitting upwards, right? I was sure my tires were going to blow. I mean, you could take eggs and make an omelet on the cement. It was that hot, right?
Right. And I think you're being humble here, because I have that in 2021, that's the year with all those things you're explaining, you not only won, but you beat the men and the women. You finished before the men and the women. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
One of the hardest years.
Oh yeah. I mean, most of the competitors had dropped out, like I said, before the, because there's time stations that you have to make it, right? Like you can still continue and finish it in 13, 14 days, but it's not considered official, right? You know?
Yeah.
And I think people just had to stay inside and just, you know, have some reprieve from that heat, you know? And I kind of stuck it out a little bit, like just using, like, for example, we used an ice sock, like a sock that I wrapped around my neck full of ice, you know, and every like 3 or 4 miles, I'd have one of my crew members stand with a bottle of water that I just douse over my head, you know, just to keep it cool. Cause I'm telling you, and after that, like you douse yourself with water and within 5 minutes, you're bone dry. And you're, you know, and that pattern had kind of had to be repeated through the first 48 hours. So you can imagine how much time you're losing, you know, but we were all in the same boat. And I didn't see anyone out there. I think most people kind of hid in their RVs or in their, you know, in their vans for the air conditioning to ride it out maybe during the night. But mind you too, even at nighttime, it didn't drop much. You just didn't have the blaring sun, you know, trying to melt you like during the day, right? And that's what made it really difficult this year.
And regarding that race, again, one of the articles that you had sent to me, they commented on how humble you were. And you just said, this year I was able to slay the dragon, like almost as if, well, you were the lucky one or it just happened to be. But there's more to it, because everything that you're explaining requires intense focus, the ability to suffer through and transcend. So first, before we get to the transcendence part, what did you mean by this year I was able to slay the dragon? Like, what's slaying the dragon mean to you?
I mean, well, Ram is a different beast every time. You know, like, for example, in 2009, it was the worst rain they had ever had. I mean, I was wet probably 80% of the times. If it wasn't rain, it was hail or freezing rain, then back to rain, back to thunderstorms and lightning. It was insane. Like, that's the beast. You know, this year we had the dragon, this, you know, blew fire at us the whole way, right? And honestly, I mean, you couldn't ride as fast as you want. It was a race of survival. I mean, you can even ask the other two men that came in, like Ash came in 17 hours behind me, the first man, I should say. And then the last finisher came in, I think an hour after or 2 hours after him, somewhere around there, right? But I mean, we all sat and discussed it this year that it was a race of survival. It really was.
So being that all that survival that you have to endure and push through, what type of mind, body, and or spirit practices do you have during training, like to prepare for something like that and during the race? And you can call on your military experience that helped you gain those practices. But what is it you do to slay that dragon and to keep going?
Well, for one, I train very hard. Like when I'm training or preparing for a race, I just laser in 110% to what I'm doing. Everything else is on a shelf. And that gives me the confidence knowing that I did my homework. When I come to that line, I need to tell myself there's nothing else I could have done, mm-hmm. you know, to prepare than what I have done. And that gives me the confidence I need, because you're going to remember with Race Across America, it's not a physical. After so many hours, I'm going to say after so many days, it becomes mental. Ram is 20% on your physical part and it's 80% mental, because like I said, your body is going to tell you quit, but you got to learn to kind of overcome that, right? You know, and learning to be comfortable being uncomfortable, that's another aspect, right? Mm-hmm. So I try to replicate as much as I can of the things I'm going to go through in Ram, of course, minus the heat, I live in Canada, on my training and on the bike. Is training really tired, training throughout the night, not using lights, I don't look at the phone, the television, I don't listen to music, I'm on the trainer sometimes 12 hours a day, right? So you're in that kind of robotic state of mind, and that's what you do in training to prepare for Race Across America. Of course, it's not 110%, but you try and plus don't forget, I have the experience of knowing two other Rams prior, you know, with the mental aspect of it, of knowing. But like I said, every year it's something different. My first time in 2011, perfect conditions. I had rain one day in Pennsylvania. It was kind of refreshing. 2019, it's the worst rain and cold they've ever had in hail. You know, 2021, you know, it was like riding through hell. I mean, so, who knows what's going to happen this year and next year and the year before, right? You know, you just don't know.
What do you say to yourself when you're training? So you're 100%, you give 110%. So when you're at the starting line, you know, there's nothing else you could have done. But while you're training, what do you say to yourself that makes all that worth it?
Well, I mean, I think, I understand what you're saying. I mean, I think I have a goal and a purpose to what I'm doing. I mean, for many people, even finishing it in the 12 days, yay, that's great. Everyone has their own personal. So it's not to compare with other people. But for me, I'm bent on doing that 10-day. I want to break that record on this long course, right? And even at 52 years old, I still feel I have the ability to do that. You know, I am pushing the envelope. But I think too is just, I know what I have to do. I don't have a lot of time to do it, but I still really believe that I can do it. But mind you, with Ram, you need a little bit of luck too on your side, because conditions can change everything. anything, right? You know, so I think you're asking yourself, why are you doing this? And for me, it's a personal thing, right? It's very important. You know, I put all this time in training, and this is my one shot kind of to prove that I can, you know, even at 52 years old, you can make anything happen, right? So I think that is, it's what I do in my commitment is leading up to the race that gives me all the confidence, both physically and mentally.
Okay. And would you say that's the most transformative experience you've had, or has there been something else? It doesn't have to have been an athletic event. Like, what event in your life would you consider the most life-changing event?
Oh my gosh, there's a number of, I mean, I'm going to say like, well, I mean, the 2005 crash I had in pro racing Cascade. I mean, I shouldn't be sitting here right now. I don't know how I survived it, you know, when you're rolling down a mountainside at 80 kilometers an hour and then you land on your face, you know, and you're bed bound and doctors say you'll never walk properly without a walker or a cane and you'll never race again, you know. So when you're at that, you know, when you're in that position, and even in Velo News, they said it was one of the worst crashes in the history of the sport, minus, of course, people who have died, right? So, you know, coming from finally reaching the top at 38 years old and bang, in 30 seconds, you lose everything. You never know if your life is going to be the same again. I think that really taught me what the human body is capable of doing. Because honestly, with everything I had done, you know, including the stuff I did in the Middle East, nothing beat me up more physically or mentally than the bike. And it really taught me, like I said, what it takes to be the best. And, you know, if the words I can't often linger in your vocabulary, just read my story and that'll wipe it right out, right? Because that's not the only crash. I mean, a lot of other things right. That happened, but I'm going to say 2005 for sure.
Wow. Now going through all that recovery, when they told you you're not going to walk right again without assistance or a cane or something, did that push you even harder to recover and to gain your strength back? You obviously didn't listen to what they were saying.
No, of course not. I mean, I remember I wake up, because I mean, like, my face was, I basically lost half my face, so I had to get plastic surgery. It wasn't pretty, right? And when you're lying there bedbound, you know, you can imagine what's going through your head, but I could feel my legs, I could move my legs. So, I mean, listen, I basically made a promise to myself, you know, I worked too damn hard to get to that point where I was. And I just said to myself, I don't care how long it takes, the kind of pain I'm going to go through, I'm going to get back on that damn bike. I'm going to race again. I'm going to come back even stronger than I did before all this crap happened. And I started my recovery as soon as I made that decision. I didn't wait till tomorrow or the next day. I started it as soon as I made that decision. Because, you know, sometimes when you're faced with an overwhelming situation, you don't know what to do and you buckle and you freeze, right? The point is, you have to do something, even if it seems like it's nothing, because those baby steps eventually will get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and you'll get to that finish line.
I like that. Even though it feels like it's nothing, even when you're struggling on whatever course it may be, course of life, RAM, whatever,
right?
Little pedal matters. Even if you feel like you're not moving, you're stuck, or you're so hot you can't move, or a marathon.
Exactly. Exactly.
That moves you.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the only thing I could do at that day was contract my abs. That was the only thing I could do. I was bedbound. I couldn't move. But every day I did something today that I couldn't do the day before. Right. You know what I mean? Eventually you have a little bit of mobility, a little bit of movement, you know, and always trying to be in a positive mode, because it was the worst pain I had ever been through. Right. I mean, honestly, I had more bad days than I had good days, but you have to focus on those good days, because it'll transition. You will eventually have more good days than you will bad days.
I agree. Which that actually leads into the next question I have, where you were quoted as saying, I don't really ever consider quitting as an option, which applies to the accident, to RAM, to everything that you do. And maybe a big question, but I'm curious where that comes from. Like, some people are like, okay, this is my limit. I'm hurt. I'm injured. I probably may not walk right again. So that's okay, you know, as long as I'm alive. So where does that come from? You never consider quitting.
I mean, of course you... quitting should never be an option unless, of course, it's life-threatening, right? And to me, for situations, you know, where, you know, it might not be the outcome that you want, I find that patterns are often repeated. You know, when you quit once, it's easy to quit again and again and again, right? So no matter what you do, even if it's not the outcome that you want, sometimes you have to really dig deep. You know what I mean? And tell yourself, you're going to get through this and you're going to make it to your finish line. Because if you don't, you will regret it. And having regret is the worst feeling in the world, right? Like even, you know, when I had the Shermer's neck in my first round, when my neck kind of dropped, right? You know, we were on record-breaking pace until, you know, that condition happened. But I dug deep, you know, they shaved my head, tied my head back, whatever. I still ended up winning the race. It wasn't the outcome that I wanted, but it made me stronger in that sense is that, you know what? Because if I did quit, I would regret it for the rest of my life, right? And it will haunt you, you know? Regret is the worst feeling in the world. So like I said, even if it's not the outcome that you want, whatever you start and whatever you're committed to and whatever passion you have, you make it to your finish line and then go from there. And reevaluate. Don't stop midway, because I promise you, it'll change you to the worst. It won't make you a great person and you'll regret it.
It's similar. Even if you don't feel like working out, I don't think anyone ever regrets a workout showing up. You might.
Well, sometimes, sometimes the hardest part is just starting, right? That's, you know, like if you want to go for a run and it's raining outside and whatever, you go, oh, damn, you know?
Yeah.
But once you get going, it's like, hallelujah, those endorphins kick in and you're so happy that you did it, right? So you got to think of that as the satisfaction and the feeling, you know, of you know, the happiness that you'll feel of actually doing an achievement, that it'll just make it easier when you remember the outcome will always be better, right?
And can you explain quickly the Shermer's neck for people who don't know what that is?
Right. Yeah. Sorry. So what happens when you're in that kind of aggressive position and your head is up like that? I mean, that's not a natural position because we're normally upright, you know? So what happens is all muscles kind of that holds your head up, you know, they just give out. So the head collapses. And it normally happens primarily for people who've had injuries, like for me, I crashed many times in pro racing, so I have a little bit of nerve damage, and that's not, you know, it's really hard to train that, you know. So what happens is, again, muscles collapse, you can't see anything, your head drops, and it takes, and the onset of it, when you feel that tingling in the back, the onset happens within an hour and a half, right, you know. So, and for us, in my first round, that happened on day three, so the solution, you know, my crew chief and my crew came up with is basically was shaving me from year to year. The hair I had on top of my head, they took tensor bandage, they French braided it into three parts of my head, they pulled it back and they tied it to the back of my heart rate monitor and sports bra. So it's kind of like a bobblehead, you know, but when there's a will, there's a way, you just find it.
Right. Sounds so painful. So next question. So talk about pain, when you're feeling the pain of that, I know you have a no quit attitude. Do you ever like call on like some, what you would call like a higher power or just energy resources, like anything abstract, or is it just complete mental focus?
I'm going to say it's complete mental focus. Like, you know, in the days where, you know, the Shermer's neck, when, you know, they first put my head back, tied my hair back, whatever. I mean, we were alternating Aleve, Tylenol and Advil just to alleviate the pain a little bit. Right. You know, so it really had to focus. And I think too, even now when I'm in pain, you know, when sometimes you're doing ultra endurance riding or anything, any sport where you just feel that incredible pain and you're tired and you just want to give up, I think it's to redirect your focus. Right. Okay. You know, because if you're going to focus on that and dwell on that and think, oh, this really hurts, focus on, you know what, I'm going to make it to the finish line. Think about how good you're going to feel. Everyone else has experienced the same thing. Have confidence in your training. So, you know what I mean? Is rather than going and focusing on the negative, try and focus on the positive. And for me personally, that's what helps me get through those bumps.
So are you familiar with like disassociation, like to get through pain, like your mind goes somewhere else? It sounds like rather than your mind going somewhere else and blocking it out, you actually use other thoughts to, am I saying it? Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, other thoughts as to what you're doing, right? You know, no, for me, you know, you have one purpose, right? And I think too, you're expecting it to, I mean, I don't, well, you're going to expect, you also be prepared for it, you know, because you are going to experience some form of discomfort, right? And that part again is the mental part of it. And again, it's not complaining about, you know, you can complain about it to yourself, is just like you said, is redirect yourself. What are you thinking of? And why are you thinking of that? And for me, like I said, it helps. And eventually it does, it goes away. Cause I mean, RAM is like this, it's a roller coaster ride. Sometimes you're going to feel euphoric and awesome. And sometimes you're going to hate everybody on the planet, right? What I mean? It's like having PMS for 7 days, up and down for everybody. You know what I mean? And you'll get through those bumps, right, eventually. So when you're feeling good, you want to really hold on to that as much as you can, you know?
I can see why. And tell us a little bit about your personal memoir called No Limits, of where that title came from, what that means to you. And maybe, I know you told us some of your stories, a little bit about what's in the book.
Well, for one, I wasn't in favor of writing the book. I mean, that kind of idea came when I came back from the Middle East and I kind of started cycling. People started to find out about my history, you know, and I said, I'd never write a book in a million years. I'm just too much of a private person. So the book happened actually is when I started, like when I retired from racing, I started presenting. So I was with a speaking bureau. And I think it was the feedback after of people hearing my story saying, you know what, there's something you said that I just needed to hear that helped change their life or help them get through a difficult time or whatnot, you know, and hearing that of just something simple that I said, I think that was enough to really register saying, you know what, I have to write a book and go deeper into some of the things that I went through. Right. And I think that was the purpose, you know, of just, you know, because, you know, when you win a race, you have this euphoric feeling of, yes, it's the best. Right. But it doesn't compare when somebody comes up to you and says, you know what, you did something to change my life. That feeling I had never experienced with any race. And that's why I wrote the book, because I hope even if I help one person, that's enough for me, you know, and that was the motivation of writing the book.
And the title, No Limits, did you come up with that or did somebody say?
I think we had all a, I think it was a vote, whatever, No Limits, whatever, Without Limits. You know what I mean? So I think it's just because I think limitations is what stops us from progressing, right? You know, so that's why we kind of added the No Limits into the vocabulary.
I think it's a perfect title for you.
Thank you.
What is your next adventure, athletic wise, book wise, motivational speaker, like all around? What are your next adventures?
Well, I have a documentary coming out, hopefully by the end of March. So that was kind of it's been in the works for 3 years. COVID kind of put a little bit of a stop on that for about 6 months, but we're back in production. So that's coming out. And I am bent on the 10-day RAM. So I will go back to race. And then another race I hope to do is a Trans-Siberia, which is a 9,000 kilometer race, a little bit longer. It's actually almost double the distance of RAM, and no woman has been able to complete it. So those are the two athletic endeavors that I hope to achieve in the next 3 years. And then, of course, working on the documentary. And then a second book will be hopefully coming out in the next year or so.
Well, that's great. Before we go, can you tell me a little bit about the 9,000 kilometer race?
Yes, it's called the Trans-Siberian. It's basically a race across Moscow, you know, so it's a little bit, I don't know, that's what, that 5,000 miles. Sorry, I'm trying to make the transition, right? But yeah, and I just saw a clip of it from one American rider, Shangri-La, who attempted to race it. She didn't finish it. It was a two American women have tried. But I just think it's something right up my alley. You know, I think I might have a good shot in it. This year they were full. They actually didn't really want to take my application, but it took a little bit of convincing, you know, I said, just give me the opportunity, right? And so I think they did their research. They looked into my background. And so not next year, the year after, if they're able to run the race again, you know, just based on the conditions with COVID, then I'll be competing in that race.
And the women who haven't finished in the past, did they come close? Do you know the...
Not really. Yeah. I think the first quarter, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, so it's brutal, but they do allow women in. It's just that none have finished yet.
They only allow 13 racers, mind you. Right. So they're not anyone can go in there. You have to kind of, you know, you have to think about, I understand their point. Like, you want to take all this money, because it's not cheap to go do a race like that into a foreign country and whatever, and commit yourself for 28 days. So they just want to make sure you know what the race is about. And they want you to have quite a substantial background in ultra endurance racing. So I think I do. I mean, you know, aside from Race Across America, I've done Race Across the West and a dozen other, you know, shorter 500 mile races with great success. So I should be a good candidate, right?
I think so. So you have been admitted. You can race that race.
Yes, I have. I got the thumbs up. Yes.
That's
yes.
Wonderful. Well, we're all rooting for you. And thank you for sharing your story.
And thank you for having me.
We could talk again and hear the next adventure.
Right. Awesome. Thanks again.
For more podcasts or information on educational programs at Sophia University, go to www.sophia.edu. Thank you for listening.